Chapter 6. "I'll help you," said Mr. Ramey, and guided by Linda, the pair walked along the fence till they reached a narrow gap in its boards. Through this they disappeared, watched curiously in their descent by the grinning Linda, while Mrs. Hochmuller and Aunt Eliza were left alone in the summer house. Mrs. Hochmuller looked at her guest with a confidential smile. "I guess they'll be gone quite a while," she remarked, jerking her double chin toward the gap in the fence. "Oaks like that don't never remember about the dime." And she drew out her knitting. Aunt Eliza could think of nothing to say. "Your sister, she thinks a great lot of him, don't she?" her hostess continued. Aunt Eliza's cheeks grew hot. "Ain't you a teeny bit lonesome away out here sometimes?" she asked. "Should think you'd be scared nights, all alone with your daughter." "Oh, no, I ain't," said Mrs. Hochmuller. "Oosie, I take in washing, that's my business, and it's a lot cheaper doing it out here than in the city. Where'd I get a drying ground like this in Hoboken? And then it's safer for Linda too, it jeeps her out of the streets." "Oh," said Aunt Eliza, shrinking. She began to feel a distinct aversion for her hostess, and her eyes turned with involuntary annoyance to the square-backed form of Linda, still inquisitively suspended on the fence. It seemed to Aunt Eliza that Evelina and her companion would never return from the wood. But they came at length, Mr. Ramey's brow pearled with perspiration, Evelina pink and conscious, a drooping bunch of ferns in her hand. And it was clear that, to her at least, the moments had been winged. "Do you suppose they'll revive?" she asked, holding up the ferns. But Aunt Eliza, rising at her approach, said stiffly, "Colin, we'd better be getting home, Evelina." "Mercy me. Ain't you going to take your coffee first?" Mrs. Hochmuller protested, and Aunt Eliza found to her dismay that another long gastronomic ceremony must intervene before politeness permitted them to leave. At length, however, they found themselves again on the ferry boat. Water and sky were gray, with a dividing gleam of sunset that sent sleek opal waves in the boat's wake. The wind had a cool, tarry breath, as though it had traveled over miles of shipping, and the hiss of the water about the paddles was as delicious as though it had been splashed into their tired faces. Aunt Eliza sat apart, looking away from the others. As he had made up her mind that Mr. Ramey had proposed to Evelina in the wood, and she was silently preparing herself to receive her sister's confidence that evening. But Evelina was apparently in no mood for confidences. When they reached home, she put her faded ferns in water, and after supper, when S.E. had laid aside her silk dress and the forget-me-not bonnet, she remained silently seated in her rocking chair near the open window. It was long since Aunt Eliza had seen her in so uncommunicative a mood. The following Saturday, Aunt Eliza was sitting alone in the shop when the door opened and Mr. Ramey entered. He had never before called at that hour, and she wondered a little anxiously what had brought him. "Has anything happened?" she asked, pushing aside the basket full of buttons as he had been sorting. "Nuts I know of," said Mr. Ramey tranquilly. "But I always close up the store at 2 o'clock Saturdays at this season, so I thought I might as well call round and see you." "I'm real glad, I'm sure," said Aunt Eliza, "but Evelina's out." "I know that," Mr. Ramey answered. "Met her round the corner. She told me she got to go to that new Dyer's up in 48th Street. She won't be back for a couple of hours, Harley, will she?" Aunt Eliza looked at him with rising bewilderment. "Oh, I guess not," she answered, her instinctive hospitality prompting her to add, "Colin, won't you sit down just the same?" Mr. Ramey sat down on the stool beside the counter, and Aunt Eliza returned to her place behind it. "I can't leave the store," she explained. "Well, I guess we're very well here." Aunt Eliza had become suddenly aware that Mr. Ramey was looking at her with unusual intentness. Involuntarily, her hand strayed to the thin streaks of hair on her temples, and thence descended to straighten the brooch beneath her collar. "You're looking very well today, Miss Bunner," said Mr. Ramey, following her gesture with a smile. "Oh," said Aunt Eliza nervously. "I'm always well in health, she added. I guess you're healthier than your sister, even if you are less sizable. Oh, I don't know. Evelina's a mite nervous sometimes, but she ain't a bit sickly. She eats heartier than you do, but that don't mean nothing, said Mr. Ramey. Annalisa was silent. She could not follow the trend of his thought, and she did not care to commit herself farther about Evelina before as he had ascertained if Mr. Ramey considered nervousness interesting or the reverse. But Mr. Ramey spared her all farther indecision. Well, Miss Bunner, he said, drawing his stool closer to the counter, I guess I might as well tell you first as last what I come here for today. I want to get married. Annalisa, in many a prayerful midnight hour, had sought to strengthen herself for the hearing of this avowal, but now that it had come she felt pitifully frightened and unprepared. Mr. Ramey was leaning with both elbows on the counter, and she noticed that his nails were clean, and that he had brushed his hat, yet even these signs had not prepared her. At last she heard herself say, with a dry throat in which her heart was hammering, colon mercy me, Mr. Ramey. I want to get married, he repeated. I'm too lonesome. It ain't good for a man to live all alone, and eat nothing but cold meat every day. No, said Annalisa softly. And the dust fairly beats me. Oh, the dust I know. Mr. Ramey stretched one of his blunt-fingered hands toward her. I wish you'd take me. Still Annalisa did not understand. She rose hesitatingly from her seat, pushing aside the basket of buttons which lay between them. Then she perceived that Mr. Ramey was trying to take her hand, and as their fingers met a flood of joy swept over her. Never afterward, though every other word of their interview was stamped on her memory beyond all possible forgetting, could she recall what he said while their hands touched. She only knew that she seemed to be floating on a summer sea, and that all its waves were in her ears. Me, she gasped. I guess so, said her suitor placidly. You suit me right down to the ground, Miss Bunner. That's the truth. A woman passing along the street paused to look at the shop window, and Annalisa half hoped she would come in, but after a desultory inspection she went on. Maybe you don't fancy me? Mr. Ramey suggested, discountenanced by Annalisa's silence. A word of assent was on her tongue, but her lips refused it. She must find some other way of telling him. I don't say that. Well, I always kinder thought we was suited to one another, Mr. Ramey continued, eased of his momentary doubt. Always liked a quiet style, no fuss and airs, and not afraid of work. He spoke as though dispassionately cataloging her charms. Annalisa felt that she must make an end. But, Mr. Ramey, you don't understand. I've never thought of marrying. Mr. Ramey looked at her in surprise. Why not? Well, I don't know, fairly. She moistened her twitching lips. The fact is, I ain't as active as I look. Maybe I couldn't stand the care. I ain't as spry as Evelina nor as young, she added, with a last great effort. But you do most of the work here, anyways, said her suitor doubtfully. Oh, well, that's because Evelina's busy outside, and where there's only two women the work don't amount to much. Besides, I'm the oldest. I have to look after things, as he hastened on, half pained that her simple ruse should so readily deceive him. Well, I guess you're active enough for me, he persisted. His calm determination began to frighten her. She trembled lest her own should be less staunch. No, no, she repeated, feeling the tears on her lashes. Couldn't, Mr. Ramey, I couldn't marry. I'm so surprised. I always thought it was Evelina always. And so did everybody else. She's so bright and pretty it seemed so natural. Well, you was all mistaken, said Mr. Ramey obstinately. I'm so sorry. He rose, pushing back his chair. You'd better think it over, he said, in the large tone of a man who feels he may safely wait. Oh, no, no. It ain't any sort of use, Mr. Ramey. I don't never mean to marry. I get tired so easily I'd be afraid of the work. And I have such awful headaches. She paused, racking her brain for more convincing infirmities. Headaches, do you? Said Mr. Raimi, turning back. My, yes, awful ones, that I have to give right up to. Evelina has to do everything, when I have one of them headaches. S.E. has to bring me my tea in the mornings. Well, I'm sorry to hear it, said Mr. Raimi. Thank you kindly all the same, Annalisa murmured. N.D. please don't, she stopped suddenly, looking at him through her tears. Oh, that's all right, he answered. On you fret, Miss Gunner. Folks have got to suit themselves. She thought his tone had grown more resigned since S.E. had spoken of her headaches. For some moments he stood looking at her with a hesitating eye, as though uncertain how to end their conversation, and at length she found courage to say in the words of a novel S.E. had once read, I don't want this should make any difference between us. Oh, my, no, said Mr. Raimi, absently picking up his hat. You'll come in just the same, she continued, nerving herself to the effort. He'd miss you awfully if you didn't. Evelina, she paused, torn between her desire to turn his thoughts to Evelina and the dread of prematurely disclosing her sister's secret. Don't Miss Evelina have no headaches? Mr. Raimi suddenly asked. My, no, never well, not to speak of, anyway. She ain't had one for ages, and when Evelina's sick she won't never give in to it, Annalisa declared, making some hurried adjustments with her conscience. I wouldn't have thought that, said Mr. Raimi. I guess you don't know us as well as you thought you did. Well, no, that's so, maybe I don't. I'll wish you good day, Miss Bunner, and Mr. Raimi moved toward the door. Good day, Mr. Raimi, Annalisa answered. She felt unutterably thankful to be alone. She knew the crucial moment of her life had passed, and she was glad that she had not fallen below her own ideals. It had been a wonderful experience, and in spite of the tears on her cheeks she was not sorry to have known it. Two facts, however, took the edge from its perfection. That it had happened in the shop, and that S.E. had not had on her black silk. She passed the next hour in a state of dreamy ecstasy. Something had entered into her life, of which no subsequent impoverishment could rob it. She glowed with the same rich sense of possessorship that once, as a little girl, S.E. had felt, when her mother had given her a gold locket and S.E. had sat up in bed in the dark, to draw it from its hiding place beneath her nightgown. At length a dread of Evelina's return began to mingle with these musings. How could she meet her younger sister's eye without betraying what had happened? She felt as though a visible glory lay on her, and she was glad that dusk had fallen when Evelina entered. But her fears were superfluous. Evelina, always self-absorbed, had of late lost all interest in the simple happenings of the shop, and Annalisa, with mingled mortification and relief, perceived that she was in no danger of being cross-questioned as to the events of the afternoon. She was glad of this, yet there was a touch of humiliation in finding that the portentous secret in her bosom did not visibly shine forth. It struck her as dull, and even slightly absurd, of Evelina not to know at last that they were equals. Part 2. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.